Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius Tactheratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
In uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, well, probably YouTube with this one, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We certainly do appreciate your support. And speaking of support, we couldn't do it without the amazing support of our sponsor. C60 Purple Power has been fantastic for us. I tell you what, man, this product that they have is so amazing. It was theorized back in the 60s by Buckminster Fuller. It took two decades before a group of scientists actually even found it in the 80s. And when they did, they were rewarded for their work with the Nobel Prize. So it's kind of a big deal. It's been making its way through the scientific community for a while, but it's finally now available in retail form. So we've got access to it. I think everybody should go to c60purplepower.com and just read up about it. Read about what it's doing. It's a naturally occurring carbon molecule, or molecule comprised of 60 carbon atoms. They call it a free radical scavenger. It's the most powerful antioxidant known. There's a lot of reasons to check this out. So do this. Go to c60purplepower.com, read up on it, see if it's right for you. If it is, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money, and you'll be buying an amazing product that I've been taking for a while, and also helping to support the show. These statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, prevent, or mitigate any disease. That's what they make us say, so that's what I'm saying. Also, if you're looking to convert some of your fiat Federal Reserve notes into something tangible like gold and silver, then you might want to talk to Tony Arterburn. He is our gold and silver guy over at Wise Wolf. You can reach him through www.macroaggressions.gold. What you'll do is you'll connect with him, reach out to him via text, email, or telephone. Tell him what you've got in mind. You're looking to buy something. You're looking to buy some gold, maybe some silver. You want to convert your IRA into physical metal. Oh, he can help you with that. So I think that's worth taking a look. You don't want to be the last guy with hyperinflation. You don't want to fill your wheelbarrow up with Weimar Republic Deutschmarks and try and buy yourself a loaf of bread or fight some asshole in the, you know, an aisle three who's got the last loaf of bread and you need it. So look, let's start planning ahead of time, start thinking proactively instead of reactively. And we'll get through all of this insanity. Speaking of being proactive, I think you're really going to love the guest, the topic, everything about it. He is the CEO of Food Forest Abundance. He is an entrepreneur. He is a, we're going to have to come up with a good name for you, Jim. I don't know, a food maverick or something like that. It's Jim Gale, everybody. Yep. How are you, Jim? Nice to see you.
Thank you, Charlie. It's fantastic to be here. I've been watching some of your videos today, and I'm so in alignment with your message about let's wake up and let's do things that help decentralize these radically destructive and unsustainable and even wickedly evil systems.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm really glad you're here. I've been getting into your stuff as well. I have a group show that I do with Sam Tripoli and Ricky Verandas and a guy named Midnight Mike. It's a great group show. We bring in all these experts. We find different topics. We bring in all the experts on a certain thing. Maybe it's vaccines. Maybe it's something else, war, whatever. We'll bring in all the experts. We've had Dell Bigtree on the show a couple of times. And so I got a chance to watch your amazing interview with Dell, where you didn't just sit down with an interview with him. You went out and actually showed him what you're doing. So let's start from the beginning for people that are unaware of what it is that you're doing and why your work is so important. Let's just break down from the beginning, what is a food forest?
All right. So a food forest is a system that mimics natural systems. Like I point to the forest at the end of your road or in your backyard if you live on the edge of a natural system. And I ask, how much maintenance do you give that system? And people go, what are you talking about? Nature maintains it. It doesn't need any maintenance. A food forest is that type of system, a system that mimics natural systems, yet it's designed to produce a yield for humans, for people, and also for animals, because then those animals come into the system and they can be part of the yield for people. So it's basically a food forest is like, in fact, I'll frame it right off the bat. There's one thing stronger, more powerful than all of the armies of the world, said Victor Hugo a long time ago. And that is an idea whose time has come. Mm-hmm. Now, that, first of all, that's a big statement. If you unpack it, what's stronger than all the armies of the world and how relevant is that right effing now? It's pretty relevant.
Yeah.
Right. The statement, an idea whose time has come, implies that the idea is already in existence. Mm-hmm. And not only is the idea in existence, but everybody I've ever spoken to not only has heard of the idea, but they can describe the idea in glorious detail. Here's the rub. Everybody I've ever talked to think it's a utopian fantasy. They think it's an impossibility. They think it's religious gibberish. And I'm not a religious person. I'm a very spiritual person. I look at this from a point of logic. The Garden of Eden is the idea whose time has come. Mm-hmm. And I can unpack that throughout your show. And this is the way that we defeat all of the armies of the world, by turning our energy and our focus towards enjoying life, towards creating radical abundance. And I'm going to share with everybody exactly how to do that.
I'm super excited in this. You and I are in the United States, and in the United States, we have devised a system of just-in-time trucking, delivery, supply chain situation that moves around products from all over the world in general, but also inside the United States. We truck things from, I'm originally from Southern California. You know, I grew up in Palm Springs. There's dates. They take those dates. They truck them all over the country because dates don't grow everywhere. So there's part of this that I understand. And there's part of this that has to do with the geography, but there's part of it that just has to do with a lot of other people doing it the way that other people have done it in the past. And that is, well, we just package everything up and truck it and ship it over here and do this and do, like, it's nothing. But we've become so detached from our food supply chain that any sort of disruption it's not just like, maybe it starts as an inconvenience to us with toilet paper last year. We got a little trial run of that. But then it morphs into something a little bit more dangerous, where you, when you're talking about food, the supply chain of food breaking down, then you are, now you're getting into an area where we've got real fear. So part of what I like about your idea is that, like you said, it's an idea that whose time has come. It's right there in front of our faces. But especially given what we've been going through, the spotlight is literally on the supply chain right now. And part of what is being supplied through that chain is food. And we have to come up with a different relationship with our food. And I really think that you might be on to how we can do that. Now, I think the first question that people are going to ask is like, I'm not a gardener. Like, what do you want from me, man? I'm not a gardener. I don't know how this works. I'm not a farm. I moved out here because I don't know how to do those things. Now you're going to tell me I have to learn how to do this. Is this process going to make, am I going to need to have a farming background and agriculture background? Am I going to like to be in the soil? Am I going to have to be kind of a hippie? Or is this something that I can integrate into my life in a relatively seamless fashion?
So you just alluded to so many of the programs that society has around growing food. I don't want to be a freaking farmer. You know, that's not my job. My job is to design and install a food forest that you can set it and forget it, or you can use the same amount of resources that you currently use with your current landscape. Okay. The difference is that it will provide an incredible yield for generations to come. You know, and I love talking about the why, because I think as Tony Robbins, once the why is big enough, the how takes care of itself, right? Mm-hmm. That is so freaking true. So there's so many layers of programming, which is, I call it the three BSs, the bad science, the belief systems, and the bullshit. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the system that we've grown up with. In fact, I was watching a show the other day with my kiddo, and I understand that the television program literally programs our mind. And so I'm thinking, okay, what in here? It was a Disney show. So what in here is programming my little girl right now, my two-year-old? And then as soon as I asked the question, right in front of me, they were celebrating a birthday party with cake and hot dogs, right? Now, why would we eat poisons consciously, right? Well, it's programmed. They just showed you Mickey Mouse is eating cake and hot dogs. She looks up, I want some cake and hot dogs, right? So this is so insidious and it goes so deep that to kind of realize it, to see clearly, is our jobs as humanity. And the number one thing that we have to overcome, that we get to overcome, is fear. Once we rise our vibrations, as Tesla said, in up from this pride and shame and rage that their programs are trying to instill in us, and get to this place of faith, which of course the Communist Party doesn't want, right? And neither do the deep staters. They don't want faith. Faith in us. We're your lords, right? Well, when we can break that apart and start having faith in the natural God-given systems. I don't pretend to know what God is. It's definitely not some guy with a beard in the sky, right? But this magic that has been given to us, it's all around us. When we can start having faith and trust the messages that come from the gap between the thoughts, that's when we literally are going to create, and it's already happening, the Garden of Eden over the next 20 years, everywhere.
Yeah, this is our life jacket being thrown to us. We just don't recognize it as such. I have a sponsor for the show, My Patriot Supply. They sell all the survival food and all the stuff that people could use in the event that they needed it. And my big hope is that people buy it and never need it.
Yeah.
But there's another way to go about this. And this is to have some of that food available to you right now. Yeah. This is your internal supply chain, so to speak, or you know, your local supply chain. So let's say you're just a guy with a house. You got a backyard, but it's nothing special. what is the criteria for some for working with you guys? Like, what do they, what does somebody need? I've been on the website. I see that you can do, you've got plans for homes that are quarter acre and less. You've got plans for homes that fit, you know, a quarter to maybe a full acre. And then you've got another set of plans for people that have an acre to 3 acres. It seems like you can probably work with just about anybody. Is that
anybody? We are designing mountaintops in California, resorts in Thailand, residents in Poland, all over the world. Wherever there is land, we can design it to be productive. And that includes the permaculture principles. And I want to share too that my job, my role in this transition from radical evil and death to abundance and life and joy is to become the most effective communicator I can. The science is already there. Bill Mollison, who, by the way, one of my favorite quotes got me bawling when I heard this. He said, though the problems of our world are increasingly complex, the solutions remain embarrassingly simple. I started bawling because I was going through that period 14 years ago of cognitive dissonance. I was learning that the world is not how I grew up believing and being programmed that it was, right? So bottom line is, when you install a designed food forest mimicking these systems, you can literally walk away from it. We've got one in Galt's Landing that we put in about 18 months ago, and we have done nothing for 14 months. And the only thing we've done is we had to cut a path around the middle around it because it was just a dense jungle of food producing plants. There's longevity spinach on the ground and turmeric and ginger and moringa and mangoes and avocados and peaches and Brazilian cherries and lemons and limes and citrus and passion flower. It's just insane how much abundance is coming. And this is 600 square feet on the ground. It's a 600 square foot circle with 15 fruit trees, sugar cane and yucca and bananas. I'm probably forgetting like 7 or 8 or 10. So when we want to just let it go, we can. There's an olive tree on the Greek Isle of Crete that was planted over 2000 years ago that's still producing food. Or you can turn your landscape. And if we did this in our HOAs, and we will, because it's logical on every level, then just using the HOA effort, the money, the resources that go into a standard ornamental landscape, but turning it into a functional landscape, now we just radically increased life. The amount of butterflies and bees and birds and life, the amount of herbivores that are going to come in and eat some stuff on the ground. Now, if you want to eat herbivores, do you, you know, raise cattle, or do you just have them all around all the time? It simplifies things so much that the powers that be, and this is why Kissinger said 50 years ago, if you want to control nations, control oil. If you want to control people, control their food supply. Yeah. That wasn't the ramblings of a psychopath. It was the strategy of a psychopath.
Yeah, for sure. And it's you mentioned HOAs. I've worked in real estate for a long, long time, selling new homes in homeowners associations in Las Vegas, where we made the decision in 2004 as a state that you couldn't plant grass in your front yard due to water shortages and things like that. You had to go to desert landscaping or fake turf and things like that. And it always, always, always bothered me that we didn't have the option to do something else with the front yard, which we knew we could do. And I understand that, you know, you can't, you know, in Las Vegas in the summer, you're probably not growing, you know, the sorts of things that you can grow elsewhere. I get it. It's regional. You have to be, you know, use your head. But there is so much wasted space in these, in the homes, in the front yards, of course. I understand where the HOAs come from. They want, you know, they don't want people parking their cars up in the front yard, you know, and changing tires and leaving them. I understand why they do that. And I can also maybe understand why the idea of somebody planting a garden in their front yard could potentially, you know, let it get kind of out of control and it could look weird for the neighborhood. But the backyard stuff, underutilized real estate, really, I mean, we would try to find creative ways that people, well, you can maybe fit a pool in here. Nobody ever asked, can I plant food? One person. I've sold hundreds, maybe even thousands of homes. Not a single person has ever asked me about planting food. Is that our programming? Really?
Programming? It's absolutely the strategy. Damn. So they started subsidizing the removal of fruit trees in people's backyards decades and decades ago. They paid people money to get rid, and it was always for the common good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? And then that strategy has led to, I believe it's 6 major businesses who are all controlled by basically 2 companies, Vanguard and BlackRock, to control the whole world's food supply.
Yeah.
And that is centralization by the same families that you've talked about on your show that we talk about constantly. It's the same families. And people say, oh, they're worried about global population and all this bullshit. Okay. Well, then if that were true, now I understand what it is to have too many rats in an aquarium, to have too many deer in a particular area of forest. I understand culling the herd might have some logic to it, but it's a complete bullshit because on several levels it's bullshit. One is that if those same people were sincere, then they would promote this logical step. But that would completely take them out of control. They also wouldn't mandate the poisons that are actually killing our everything. So right. It's a top-down destruction. It's not a bottom-up. They're blaming it on the bottom-up. We have to realize that govern means to manage or control, and mente means mind.
Right.
When we can free ourselves from that most obvious structure, then we're good.
Walk me through the process of how this happens. Let's say somebody's got a house. They live down the street from me outside of Denver. They say, got a decent backyard. I like this idea. They go to your website, Food Forest Abundance, and then they reach out to you guys and they say, how do I even get started? Now, is this something that you guys contract out with local people in my area? Is this, I know that you have blueprints available for sale. Explain to me how this all works for somebody.
This is where it gets just really exciting because I'm a business guy. I love scalability. I've been to the Tony Robbins. I've been to, you know, Zig Ziglar. I've read all those books with one general goal: to change the freaking world. You know, and Napoleon Hill said, whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. I actually believe that. So then I said, okay, what can I conceive and believe? I can conceive and believe that there's a 100th monkey, that there is a tipping point, and I'm going to do everything in my power because I have 4 daughters to affect that tipping point and to inspire this change. So it all starts with being inspired. If you are inspired to take the next step, then everything starts with regards to our thing with design, right? We want to design it according to natural systems, which means planting your pollinator attractors, your flowers, your chop and drop plants, your food producing plants, and your layers of soil, your worm castings, your amendment, your rock dust. When you put all of that into a very detailed blueprint, that's what we do. And then we hand over this 45-page beautiful document with all these very relevant and beneficial details. And within that document is your food forest landscape blueprint that is DIYable, or we have the cooperative business model that we've set up is literally going global. I believe now we're in 16 or 17 countries. We just opened up New Zealand and Germany and all over the place, installing food for us in people's yards.
Wow. Okay. All right. So anybody can just can have their, so, okay. So talk to me about output then. I've got a decent sized backyard, nothing special. I've got, let's go off of that 600 square foot, example that you used before, right? So it's not the biggest, but there's some space back there. What are we planting? Let's say it's here in Denver where it gets cold in the winter, gets decent in the summers, and it seems to be a good place to grow some things, right? It's not Antarctica, but it's not, you know, it's whatever. So,
right.
So
I'm from Minnesota.
What? Okay. It's not Minnesota. Yeah. So what are we going to be growing? Is this, are we talking about herbs? Are we talking about fruit trees? Are we taught, you mentioned, the sorts of plants that will attract pollinators. Do we need bees involved in this? Are we counting on birds to be involved in this cross-pollinization sort of thing? Like how much food are we getting and what sort of animals are we going to need to help us out with this whole thing?
I love it. I'm going to use my buddy, Chad Johnson. He's a world-class designer who worked with Sepp Holzer directly. Sepp is actually growing citrus trees in the Austrian Alps with lemons on them, where according to everybody's belief system, the BS, it's impossible, but he's right. Doing it, right? So Chad lives on the tip of Lake Superior, where it's colder than where you are. Mm-hmm. He's got, in his food forest, he's got 300 species of edible and medicinal plants growing on his property. And no fences other than natural fences. He creates ras barriers, right? These raspberry bushes were for sure 7 feet, maybe 8 feet tall. They were so thick that you couldn't see through them. And no animal is going to walk through there except for your Brer Rabbit, right? I mean, right. No, because that becomes the barrier. And in that food forest, it's actually expansive because the birds and the animals that do come into the system, and then they'll eat some berries or some fruit or some different things. Then they'll go out into the forest around it. And he estimates that tens of thousands of plants have been planted, food producers and medicinal plants in the surrounding area because of his food forest. So when you think about the expansiveness of this, literally the energy that we have as a top-down wicked people have put into the destruction of our natural world, it's mind-boggling. So that's the solution, is to design it according to your system. So let's say on a 600, 700, you probably have 10 to 12 fruit trees, the bigger canopy trees. You'd probably have 3 to 5 of maybe some smaller fruit trees. You could have a half a dozen of berry bushes. Actually, you could probably have a dozen and a half berry bushes, right? So you see, you're going from the top down to the next level, down to the next level. And then you've got your herbaceous layer. You've got your mushrooms. You've got your creeping vines that are medicinal and very, very, very like longevity spinach here is one of my favorites. And then you've got the vines, like the grapes, that once the trees get established, or maybe you do have a fence around the perimeter of the food forest, you use that to create like grapes or passion flower or whatever. So now when you look at this, and then you've got gingers and turmerics and yuccas and sweet potatoes and potatoes. Now you've got literally layers of food starting underground, then on it all the way up to the top.
Good Lord. Okay. Yeah. What's something like that cost a guy? A guy wants to go out and he buys the plans from you. He figures this all out, but these trees are going to cost a little something. I don't even know what the going rate is on a decent fruit producing tree. I mean, if someone told me it was $100 or $8,000, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't even know where to start. So.
Yes.
I'm assuming it's somewhere in between, but
$100 is pretty right on. You can get a lot of good berry bushes for maybe $39 to $99. A lot of good fruit trees from like in the mid 60 to 80 all the way up. If you buy something that's 3 years old in a 50-gallon pot, it might be $800, mm-hmm. right? But now you've got fruit year one and enough to pay back probably all your investment within 2 years. So when you look at it from a what's logical as far as my energy input and what am I going to yield from my input, that's where it gets off the freaking charts, right? So just in cash ROI, you're looking at, let's say, a peach tree or an apple tree, you're looking at 100% ROI within 3 to 4 years. Okay. In the actual fruit produced and the value of an organic peach. And you can look this up. What's the yield? How much does it cost? Now, when you add on the food security issues, the supply chain issues, the taste, because a vine ripened peach or apple is going to be way better than something that was picked 3 weeks early that takes 11 days to get to Whole Foods and sit on the shelf, and then another 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 days to be eaten. Now you've got something that tastes better. It's more nutrient dense because nature's perfect. It's the most efficient system we have, right? It's the foundation of everything. So when you stack the functionality of the Garden of Eden in your backyard, it becomes your insurance policy. The odds of a family getting cancer, diabetes, and heart disease who eat one healthy meal or a few healthy snacks a day out of their backyard is going to go way down. And everything kind of lines up in the ultimate stack of functions.
Yeah. Well, let's stay on the money thing. Let's stay on the return on investment, because this is as good of a reason to talk about. I mean, look, there's plenty of reasons to want this. Food, supply chain, peace of mind, the nature, all those things. But let's just say that somebody has a little bit more space than I have and likes peaches, but doesn't necessarily love them and certainly can't eat a bunch of them. Now we've got ourselves a little farmer's market business or something, do we? Or is this is this the sort of situation where you're going to throw off more products than you can consume and therefore put yourself in a situation where you can take care of your friends, your neighbors, your local farmer's market? What are you seeing with this? Are you seeing people start to take this, like, extrapolate this out in their mind and go straight into business mode with it?
Yes, it is my belief, and I actually want to do the numbers on this here in the near future, that if just what we've done so far, it just by that alone, that it's going to go viral and change the world. Of course, I want it to go faster because time is of the essence, right? Yeah. So just in cash terms, let's take this. We spent about $5,500 putting all these plants to the 600 square foot area just stacked, right? Mm-hmm. About $5,500. Year one and a half, we could probably get about $1,500 out of that. Now, only maybe 150 of that, or maybe even less than that, is actually fruit, right? Longevity spinach and lemons and cherries and things like that. But they're not very many in these immature fruit trees and berry bushes. But what is abundant is all of the branches that, and this is something I like to blow people's minds with this. You've heard of pruning fruit trees, right?
Yeah.
So people go and prune fruit trees, or most people take that branch and throw it on the ground, and that's just becomes mulch. If you go out 10 weeks ahead of time, and let's say you've got 15 fruit trees and maybe 100 branches that you want to prune, 10 branches, a tree, 150 branches, you take 3 minutes per tree, you cut a little notch in that, and you put some rooting compound and soil on there on a little gadget like a tennis ball, or you can buy these little gadgets. Now you cut it off 10 weeks later, and you've got a new $20 fruit tree. Oh. So look at it from that perspective. The time that it took times 150 of these times $20, there's $3,000, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so you could literally, if you do it wisely, you could have 100% ROI and in 3 years, probably.
Oh, okay. All right. This is working. Let's talk about the medicinal plant shrubs and plants and things like that. You want to talk about programming? We have been programmed to think that the only way to get yourself healthy is to take a pill, at least here in the West, to go to a doctor and have them tell you what they need. You know, you've got to go get this prescription. Well, they've made ancient Chinese medicine sound like quackery. They've made anything that is not straight out of the Rockefeller established medical handbook appear to be some sort of like sorcery magic or something. And yet it's gotten us to this point in where we are in human history up until 50, 75 years ago with this new form of medicine that has come out, and we seem to have been doing okay. Talk to me about the medicinal plants and shrubs and how all that works and what sorts of things people are creating for themselves that way.
Well, I'll start it with Hippocrates' quote, let thy food be thy medicine, let thy medicine be thy food. When we eat food that's not grown with poisons and that's not modified to the point where it's not meant for human consumption, then it's healing. Any food grown, vine ripened, and eaten consciously is an actual healing agent for our body. right? So that's the foundation of it. And like turmeric, there are studies that compare turmeric and the active ingredient, curcumin or cumin, that to that chemical stuff, chemo. Mm-hmm. And turmeric has one, right? Mm-hmm. Yet, if I sell turmeric and say that, I can go to jail.
Right.
And yet the pharmaceutical drugs kill millions of people per year. And a lot of people say it's only hundreds of thousands. Well, wait a minute. Cannabis kills zero, right? And it's the most important medicine in the freaking world. And yet it was made illegal by the same people you just mentioned 100 years ago, because they knew that they had to take that, the Joshua tree, all these amazing medicines out of the system, going from homeopathy to
allopathy.
Allopathy, right? Going from natural to chemical. And that's why people say that cancer is a genetic disease. Bullshit. That's a program. 100 years ago, almost nobody had cancer, and now 50% of people. And those were my ancestors. So something's wrong with that genetic argument.
Yeah, for sure. So we have a very distorted relationship with our food, be that where we grow it, how we truck it, our relationship with the animals that we eat, and things like that. Very distant, and we kind of like it that way. It's funny, one of the documentaries that got me like thinking about all this stuff was Food Incorporated years ago. I saw that on online, and I thought, God, you know, our relationship with food needs to evolve. It needs to change completely, but I'll settle for just an evolution of it, because where we are right now, it just seems like it's a bit unsustainable. In this example that we've been using, I have a backyard and I can grow things there, but I recognize that I'm not, you know, not everybody has that. And a lot of people live in urban areas. What do we have? Do we have any sort of options for these urban farmers? I remember when I was growing up, we had Urban Cowboy, the movie. Now I'm thinking urban farmers, right?
Right.
They're gonna be the new heroes, right? If you can grow food in the city on some rooftop deck, or maybe in your house, or you're growing sprouts or something, we have the ability to do that. What sort of options do we have for people with limited amounts of space?
Yeah. Well, big props to the cannabis industry again for actually demonstrating how easy it is to grow food in a closet, right? You can grow a lot of sweet potatoes in a closet. You need some lighting, you need some airflow, and I like essential oil diffusers to keep the bugs down and the mold out, right? It's so simple. And, you know, it's the process of learning it and letting your plants be your teachers. You know, microgreens are one of my favorites for indoor growing. They take as much energy and time as creating coffee in the morning. Right. Yeah. So you can go in, you can start brewing your coffee, you spray your little microgreen seeds, you put them on the tray. That whole thing takes about 2-4 minutes. And then you spray them 15 times, which takes you 30 seconds once a day. And within 2 weeks, you've got the most nutrient dense food on the planet, possibly. Yeah. Right. They're supposed to be 4 to 40 times more nutrient dense than their adult counterparts. Broccoli and kale and peas and sunflowers and amaranth and all this stuff. So that's where, if you want to start with something indoors, start with some raised beds and some soil. And we actually designed this, by the way. We actually have an indoor design team, because with the food supply chain issues, I listen to Ice Age Farmer a lot. I think there's major things happening right now, and that we have to start with storing 3 to 6 months of canned and dehydrated food and non-perishables. And then we have to have seeds, so that if you don't want to start growing food now, be ready to start growing food and have the seeds available at your home. Then you can start immediately once, if the shit hits the fan.
Yeah. And people can come go to your website and get started on all of that.
Yeah.
Good Lord. So, hydroponics, is that what we're talking about here?
No, I've built a lot of hydroponic systems. I've built huge aquaponic systems, taking the water from the jungle and putting it into a strategically located tilapia pond, filled up the pond with tilapia. And then below that was our gardens, right? That's a flow through massive aquaponic system. Hydroponics is using some kind of nutrient supplement in water, and it's it's okay. In some applications, I'd call it good. These mega corporations that are launching these, all these things to bring hydroponics to cities. I've actually created, and I was going to come to market with these really fancy greenhouses. Mm-hmm. I set that aside because I asked myself this question. Where's the best return on investment? Where is the idea whose time has come, the embarrassingly simple solution? And it's all right in front of us. It's the soil. The amount of ROI when we use that same money for a $50,000 greenhouse, we put 50 grand in the soil. It's less effort, almost infinitely less effort. The greenhouse is a job, right? But if you want to do that job, it's a wonderful job. If you don't want to do that job, it's just going to be a dirty cobweb greenhouse, which is what most of them turn into. So that's why I'm into the lazy man's farming that has the best ROI for the input, the biggest output.
Well, let's talk about the soil then, because so much of what we have problems with from this industrial farming is the soil is garbage. It's detrimental to, I mean, you would think that the Monsantos of the world or these big agri farms out there would recognize that they're not doing themselves any favors by destroying the soil that they depend on. And yet here we are with the soil destroying types of, whether it's processes that they continue to use or chemicals that they put on it. So do we have a soil problem here in the United States? The quality of the soil, is it fixable or where are we with this?
So a couple of things. Now, I don't ever quote the UN unless there's a real specific intention because I think they're a bunch of criminals.
That is correct.
The UN and permaculturalists and a lot of farmers have said the same thing, which is why I'm saying this. I like to kind of speak to the gods of the people who believe in the narrative, who believe in the governmente, because then it gets them thinking, you know, along these lines. But even they said that we have two generations of soil left. Now, they destroy soil. They toxify, they mine, they pollute. And what permaculture does is builds soil. Now, I want to give everybody a ton of hope here. Nature is so powerful. That is all we have to do is take the poisons out of the system for a few years and it'll all be cleaned up. There are actually plants. And I was just on Phoenix's podcast last night and he was sharing me these details about these plants that the studies, they can actually take the heavy metals out of the soil. They convert heavy metals, poisonous substances to magnesium and to beautiful substances, right? Nature has literally all of the answers. We just have to sit back and observe and build the life that starts in the soil.
I thought Greta had all the answers. I thought, see, she came along and she said that we were all going to die from this all.
But how dare you?
How dare you? But it appears that we actually have the ability to take back control. I mean, of the narrative. The narrative that they're putting out there is that we're all going to die because of carbon dioxide. And yet what we have trees and plants that need that. Can you give us a quick refresher course on the science behind carbon dioxide, the need for it? It's right now it's got as bad of a PR campaign as Travis Scott and Henry Ruggs III wrapped all in one. I mean, carbon is public enemy number one, or carbon dioxide. And yet last time I checked, we still kind of need that stuff. Is that correct?
That's what plants eat for lunch and dinner and snacks. Like this. So this is where this idea whose time has come theory is really messing with some of their minds. And this is where I want to bust people free, because here's how they worked it. They started many decades ago by figuring out what's the best way to psyop, to manipulate the minds, starting with the influencers. Like JP Morgan bought all of the newspapers, the relevant ones, like 100 years ago with his tribe, right? And then you've got all these corporations that have centralized all of the messaging that we see on all the major message boards in our world, starting back then with the newspapers. Always the pen is mightier than the sword, right? So when we can break free from that. And God, where was I going? So here's what's happening. They started with the global warming narrative in order to get the influencers. There's a lot of academics who know that this is a population control agenda. and a death agenda, but they buy into this demonic agenda because they think that it just has to happen, that we're culling the herd.
Right.
Even though they know and they did probably got a saline shot or no shot at all, they still go with it and they still spread it because they are under the false assumption that global warming and climate change is going to kill us when it's the poison producers that are going to kill us. And here's the beauty of it. We are waking those people up. When they hear truth, something magical happens and it resonates at a new level. And then it inspirits them. It creates enthusiasm in them. It raises their vibration. Mm-hmm. And this is how we change the world. It has to be a voluntary exchange of value, a voluntary inspired shift. Otherwise, it's force and violence.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I've been writing about some of the insanity that's out there in a couple of the books that I have. And one of the things that I had to put in there was this story about this family that got, I'm pretty sure they got arrested. They definitely got ticketed for collecting rainwater on their own property in Oregon. It's been deemed illegal. So now the state is pretending that they have the rights to the water that falls out of the sky. If have you guys had any sort of issues with your, I don't know, any sort of issues with city ordinances and things like that based on what you guys are doing? Because though you let me be clear, you shouldn't have any issues with it, but that doesn't mean but that wasn't the question. The question is, has the city ever taken a look at you or what you guys are doing and said, this has got to be illegal somehow?
Too effective? So I love this. Like, this is the engagement that I am dreaming of. When they start coming after us, because we have actually hired a scientist and we got some world-class people now aboard, like mega. And we are doing documents showing that our solution solves their narrative and throwing it right back in their face. And so I'm looking for that fight. I'm looking for them to come and say, you can't do that. When I can say, okay, here's what this doing this will do. And then because of this platform that's building rapidly, then I'm going to just expose that hypocrisy so radically. And I expect that fight to come. I would rather just flow through life simply and just have fun and just food force everywhere. But I'm expecting that there's going to be some contrast in my way at points, right? At least 11 states make it illegal to harvest the water off of your roof. And it's the epitome of insanity. But then again, nowadays, it's just par for the course.
Any chance, and this would have to be relatively optimistic, but since we're talking about changing the world here, and we're getting enthusiastic about this, like, we can't incorporate this into high schools where there's a class on this. Like, surely there has to be a segment of the school you just build out. They can be like a raised planters and things like that. You get a little couple garden. When my daughter had started at this school when she was 4 years old, in the back, they showed us where they had built this really functional garden and everyone was working on that. The kids loved it. Okay.
Yep.
We're talking about little kids there, but I don't think that it's limited to just little kids. Anybody could use this. Can we get this to a point where we have schools that are involved saying, yeah, we want this. Like, we'll take this food that comes from here and it'll go in straight to our cafeteria. It'll go, you guys after school snack, we've got apples. Here's the apple barrel. Like, Am I being too optimistic and too airy-fairy to think that we can get to this point in the world? Or have you seen something that gives you a little bit of optimism on your end?
I've never felt so good about the future in my life. And with that said, I'm aware that many people are not going to make it through. The people that stay in fear, which is below the level of integrity of consciousness, of awareness. Fear is the ultimate destruction. It's the withdrawal of the spirit, right? When we can get up to those places of faith and courage and joy. So we have actually created curriculums for schools. We have Food Forest going in and being designed right now for schools. Our give back, and this is the thing, our business model is completely unsustainable. In 20 years, we're done because there's going to be food everywhere. And
good.
We're doing that on purpose. Like,
yeah, sell yourself out of a job, Jim.
Exactly. Like these amazing homeopathic doctors that say, you don't need me anymore. Come back if you're feeling shitty. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a different way to look at the world. But we're proud of that, and we promote the transparency of everything. And so when we start putting these food forests in public areas and then turning that into marketing, right? So then all of a sudden it becomes faster and faster and faster. And the miracles that are happening every freaking day. I've got a couple of stories. One of them is just mind blowing to me still.
Let's hear it.
So we launched on the high wire 6 months ago, and it was Earth Day, which is, by the way, a big government scam, right? It's another thing to promote their Green New Deal plan. But I'm looking at it from my perspective, right? Let's care for the Earth. Let's care for Mother Nature, for God, for Source. Anyway, so we launched on Del Big Tree Show, and within about a month of that, I didn't sleep much for like 3 weeks because the phone was ringing off the hook. Right. And I get a call from, and in my, always my vision, and I guess how I got on the show, I wrote him a speech. I gave it to him. He read it. He said, Jim, this is huge. Come on the show. It was a big deal. And then a month later, I get a call from the producer of The Crocodile Hunter. Said, Jim, we'd like to shine a light on you and do a show with you. As in your vision for society. And I was like, yes, instantly, like a freaking course. And that was intention. This is all by design, not knowing how it's going to unfold, but absolutely knowing that it will unfold if I get out of the way of it. Right. And just listen to the messages. I do more meditating now than I've ever done. Ayahuasca ceremonies. I had an epic mushroom Independence Day, just meditating with epic.
You and I are going to be friends, Jim. I'm just telling
love
you.
It, buddy. That's why this shit's illegal, because it freaking helps us connect.
You know? I know.
So then about a day later, and by the way, Crocodile Hunter was my favorite show for 10 years. So that producer is kind of coincidental, like off the charts. Two days later, I get a call from the actor from my favorite show. He was my favorite actor for 5 years, right? So now I got the producer and the actor, and we just finished last month filming a pilot that is going to change the freaking world. We installed a radical food forest, including a miniature vineyard that can produce 300 to 500 bottles of wine a year, a Chinese medicine wheel with all the different medicines, and a food forest and all these different components. And we put it all on TV, on a TV show. And if you think about the impossibility of that in a statistical way, I love this stuff. Like, it's just flowing now.
Yeah. I'm sure that the advertisers, General Mills, all the advertisers of that show aren't going to be thrilled. They'll probably be calling their media planners saying, God damn it, don't run these ads, you know, don't run our ads when they're showing you how to grow food.
Yeah,
they won't buy our products anymore if they don't need it. So that's a great plan for you, is to get to the point where these big agri companies are scared. Well, you know, in speaking of scared, we saw and lunatic globalists, we saw Bill Gates go out and finance the Svalbard seed vault in Norway with his partners. Well, obviously the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, Syngenta, and the government of Norway, so that he could build this seed vault 1,100 kilometers south of the North Pole in the Arctic Circle, 400 feet up a cliff, 300 feet into the mountain, so that they could take all of the natural seeds and by all accounts hide them away from the rest of the world, while he simultaneously promotes genetically modified organisms. He was the largest individual shareholder in Monsanto. He's on a farm buying spree. He wants water rights everywhere he goes. Like, I feel like this is an arms race, is it not?
Yeah.
We need to get the natural food production going at a rate faster than the unnatural food rate production. So
that's it. If a bad idea can radically change the world in 2 years, right? And I know that it took many decades, even hundreds, maybe thousands of years planning it, but still, a good idea can just, I don't believe in destiny like as a script, but I believe in destiny as a potential. And somebody told me the other day, which just blew my mind. He said, what's, you know, Jim Gale. Let me look that up. Right. So he looks up Jim and he says, okay, that means to overthrow or supplant. Right. Mm-hmm. I love that word, supplant. And then my last name is Gale, which means strong wind. Right. Right. I'm fucking blowing, baby. Like, I think, and it's so much fun. Right. And to supplant this thing. And it's so logical. So the amount of energy that's coming in, millions of dollars, which we turn into, we capture and store energy. We use the permaculture principles, by the way, the 12 principles as a business model. And it's so fantastic. Like, this is the best business model framework that you could ever imagine. Right. And so that energy comes in and okay, how do we capture that energy and how do we turn that energy into a yield that changes the freaking world? And that's what I've been just joyfully obsessed with for a long time now. And now it's just popping.
So where do we go from here? Where does this, it starts relatively slow, but I've got a feeling about this stuff. I get the feeling that a lot of people want it, didn't know it was out there, maybe a little intimidated to know how to do it all. I don't know, maybe, yeah, well, it's, I'll take care of this later, manana, you know, all that stuff. And now, given what we've gone through over the last almost 2 years, we've seen the insanity. We've had to stay at home. We've watched supply chain situations break down. We've watched the United States Federal Reserve, privately owned bank, print 40% of all dollars just in the last year. We have hyperinflation, not just concerns, but legitimate worries that we know are going to impact. We have the CEOs of major food companies saying this supply chain issue is going to hurt. You've got the CEO of Kroger saying we're going to see food prices continue to rise. This inflation is not transitory. This is here to stay, at least for a while. People are going to feel inspired. What is the first thing for someone to do?
Yeah.
Who has had this epiphany and has realized I need to make some changes. I've got the land for it. And I don't have to have a ton of land, but I've got some space for it. I've got a little bit of money. I've definitely got the desire. Now, what do I do?
All right. So let's say that you've got $20 extra to spend, right? You go to the store, you buy some organic of your favorite organic fruits and vegetables and some sweet potatoes and some potatoes. You eat the vegetables, you take the seeds out of the vegetables and you start going on YouTube and you look up, how do I propagate? How do I start this seed? And it'll give you all the information right there. You're going to get some success and some failures right off the bat, but have fun with it. The main thing is we got to lift our energy and start loving life again. So have fun with that process. Get the potatoes in the ground, read up and watch a YouTube video on how to do that. And then you start it. Now, let's say you want to speed up time. Let's say you don't want to have a process over that much, then just call us and get a design for your yard. That is, it's an $800 investment that will probably be the best investment you could ever imagine. Because having that in your backyard, I asked my partner, Dr. Ian Scott, his whole backyard is just loaded, 63 different varieties of food producers and medicine. Mm-hmm. And I say, how much do you work in this food forest? And he goes, half an hour a day. He said it like with glee. I said, Ian, how much do you work in this food forest? He goes, oh, not at all. And I've seen him work. He stands there and he looks around.
That's it.
Yeah, he'll pick some stuff once in a while. He'll move some dirt and stuff. But it's a job of absolute joy if you look at it that way. Right. So you can stack functions and turn everything I'm talking about into an enhancement of life.
It's so good. It's so necessary. It's so frustrating that there's barriers against this, be they legal barrier, you know, HOAs and things like that, or just societal barriers or mental barriers. Like, I don't know. I'm not a gardener. I don't know how to do this stuff. I'm not a farmer. I don't know the first thing about tractors. And what you're saying is you don't need to be, right? You just need to know the right combination of these plants in and the right ecosystem in which they can all
thrive. You know,
they can all thrive, right? They one scratches the other's back. One keeps a certain predator away that doesn't eat the other stuff. One does this. They all have a role, like a community, right? Exactly. They all perform their role. And in exchange, if you do that right, then there's limited oversight needed, right? Is my water bill going to go through the roof or what?
I love that. Your water bill is probably going to go down, right? When you capture and store water. And by the way, if anybody else out there just wants to DIY their stuff, our document is a DIYable document. But let's say you just want to do it on your own. A couple tips. One is, do not let the sun hit the soil, right? Because that's not natural. That's not in a natural system. You've got branches and leaves and moss and all the different stuff that you want to have that barrier. So get mulch. Wood chips and mulch are the number one thing that people mess up with, right? Because that creates a microbiome. It creates a layer of energy transmission and transaction between the mulch and the soil. And that's where a lot of stuff starts. And then if you're going to throw in a little bit of chicken manure, a little bit of cow manure, and maybe some soil amendment, worm castings, by the way, at least in here, are the best. Right? They're gold. So you throw that in, you get it inoculated, and then it starts to live on its own. You plant some nitrogen fixers, which are just peas and beans, legumes, and then you get a couple flowering plants around there that can be multifunctional. They can be edible and medicinal as well as flowering. And now you've got a guild, which is a community of plants that actually help each other be successful.
And people can just go there to your website, foodforestabundance.com. They can take a look at three different types of blueprints that they can find depending on the size of the acreage that they're working with, or less than an acre, more than an acre. You've got these options out there. People can buy those blueprints, do it for themselves if they feel up for it, or they can partner with you and you can have somebody in their area come out and help them facilitate this process. That's
exactly right.
And so you're just like, basically, like, you have your partnerships in this area and you deal, they don't have to come to you personally, although that you'll facilitate that and make it happen. Is that how it all works?
That's how it all works. And then we encourage people to become cooperative partners, which is an incredibly lucrative and beneficial business model. It's landscaping, except for it's very functional. It's food forestry landscaping. It's easier than a lot of traditional landscaping. In some ways, there's no hardscapes or concrete or anything. You're digging holes, you're following a blueprint, putting food in the ground. The margin we advocate is about 40%, which is like landscaping. Mm-hmm. An average job is maybe $15,000. That's going to probably double next year. By January, we will be the first entity that I know of to actually finance the installation of food forests.
Oh, wow.
Yes, which is huge. That's going to 3 to 10x our volume immediately, I think. Yeah. And then the business model is, you know, you can do a food forest with three or four guys, takes 3 or 4 days, you'll walk out of there with $4,000. And you can scale it as much as your mind can help you scale it.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of people that are watching this or listening to this that are going to be like, does Jim take crypto?
Yes. Heck yes.
Yeah, he'll take crypto. Yeah. Hey, everybody, that's Jim Gale. He is doing what needs to be done. He is doing the work. You can find him foodforestabundance.com. I suggest take a look at this website, get into it, geek out. To tell your friends, your family, tell your spouse, hey, this is something that we might need to consider. I never want to come from a place of fear. You know, I don't want to try to scare people into doing these things, but I think it's incumbent upon us to be observant about what's going on, to be honest about what we see, even if it maybe isn't the greatest thing that we see coming our way. I think we need to get real about what we're facing. And food shortages, the idea of which has always been sort of unimaginable here in the United States, it's now a real concern. Jim, any final thoughts or anything you want to wrap up with before we get out of here?
Well, I want to say thank you. And I want to invite anybody who wants to be positioned well to just give us a call. Check us out. We've got our whole team. Our internal mission is to serve the cooperative. The cooperative are the people on the ground actually doing the work and helping people grow food. And it's just beautiful. We've got an incredible community of I don't like the word like-minded, but we're conscious. We're awake to what the problem is, and we're excited about what the solution is.
I'm excited about it too. I never thought I'd be excited about gardening, but I think that giving yourself the additional step away from state control, governmental oversight, things like all the things that could get you, you know, being dependent on somebody else always puts you in a bad position, or the potential for a bad position. And when it comes to food, we know that these authoritarian monsters don't have a problem starving us out. So if those of you that, if you like this episode right now, take the additional step of sharing this with your friends and family. If there's somebody in your life that you think might benefit from this, if your grandparents have always been telling you, you need to start a farm, and you're like, well, I live in the city. Well, guess what? You no longer have any excuses. It's time to get your shit together and get moving. Jim, you're the best. Thank you for stopping by and expressing and talking about your amazing company. We really desperately need this. So thank you.
Thank you, brother. It's an honor to be on your show and talk to your audience, and thank you.
Thanks so much. All right, everybody, share the show. We'll talk to you next time.